Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The Ad News Pubcast, the podcast that celebrates the industry's penchant for a sociable drop and a chat.
Welcome to the Ad News Podcast, recorded at Nova and sponsored by The Trade Desk. I'm Ad News journalist Lindsay Bennett, and today I'm joined by InStyle editor Emily Taylor from Pacific Magazines, Delicious editor-in-chief Kerry McCallum from News Corp, and Real Life Magazine's editor-in-chief Paul Merrill from Bauer to talk about all things magazine publishing. I thought it'd be a good way to start off, guys, by getting the backstory to how you got into magazines. Paul, did you want to start for us?
Well, I started off in Real Life Magazines in the UK. I did a magazine quite similar to the one I'm doing now, actually, called Chat. And then I was asked to launch one of the UK's first men's weekly magazines about 12 years ago, called Zoo. And having done that for 18 months, I then was brought over to launch it here with two young kids and a pregnant wife, and told it was just going to be 18 months. And now it's 12 years later. I did Zoo for about 5 years, then went freelance for a time, wrote a couple of books, then realised I couldn't make a living writing books. And I've been back at Bauer for about 4 or 5 years now.
Long time.
Yeah, well, it's good fun.
Yeah. And what about you, Emily?
I started in publishing, gosh, I think back in about 2002. But even before that, my university job was writing for one of the first entertainment websites in Australia. And it's very different now, I assure you. But I started at ACP when it was ACP as an assistant to a publisher. So it wasn't quite the Devil Wears Prada, but I certainly got a good grounding. I actually worked for the amazing Lynette Phillips, who taught me so much and, you know, is obviously such a big figure in media today. I then moved on to Dolly Magazine, where I started as beauty editor, which was such an amazing job for a young woman to have at that time, Dolly being such an integral part of all our growing up, I think. And then I just moved through. So I moved on to Marie Claire after that, again in beauty, moved into fashion there, and then to associate editor. I went freelance for a few years, moved to London, worked in the content space in London in retail and fashion retail with brands like Marks & Spencer and Net-a-Porter, Don Lewis. And then about 2.5 years ago, I was offered the editor role of InStyle. So I moved back from London and I've been there ever since.
Yeah, wow, really climbed the ladder there. And what about you, Kerry?
Well, I started in Brisbane, actually. I studied arts journalism at the University of Queensland, and, you know, there was no jobs. You know, they're pretty much the career mail. And I was freelancing for them, and I was desperately trying to get a job. And a friend suggested trying a smaller, sort of less popular publishing house in Sydney. So I got my first job down in Sydney. It was like 20 years ago now, on a craft magazine. And, you know, obviously it wasn't my ultimate job, but I was so thrilled to be working in magazines and working down here. But then I think about a year and a half into that, I got offered a role as a junior sub-editor on Elle, you know, back in its previous incarnation. And for me, sort of everything started from there. That was, you know, I loved it so much and I've worked for lots of different magazines and publishing houses, but first editing gig was Shop to Drop. Did that for 5 years, moved to Emily's job, editing InStyle, been there for 4 or 5 years. Moved to News to launch Sunday Style, was there for a few years, and then now obviously editing Delicious. So I've moved around, but I still really love it, same as, you know, you guys do.
And what drew you to magazines? Because obviously there is a little bit of the glitz and the glamour. If anyone could see you right now, you've got a beautiful blue dress, the heels, the earrings. Was it the glitz and the glamour of the magazine industry, or...?
You know, I think if it's just the glitz and glamour, you don't last. Certainly, you know, that's the fun, and there's you get to do amazing things and go to amazing parties and travel and meet wonderful people. But, like, in the end, I really love the nuts and bolts of editing. I still love doing a grid. I still love planning a layout. I still love planning issues, or even, you know, now online and whatever you're going to film and whatever it's become now. But I have always loved the nuts and bolts, and I think, you know, you have to sort of survive. You can't be in it for the glitz and glamour, because those people, would you guys agree, don't really last if that's what it's all about.
I would absolutely agree with that. I noticed that Lindsay hasn't commented on my outfit, which is just jeans and boots.
Very nice.
Which is very unfortunate for the fashion magazine editor in the room, but anyway. No, I would definitely agree with Carrie on that point. I think, sure, like, there's glitz and glamour, but I always sort of say it's maybe 10% glitz and glamour and 90% hard graft.
In the bunker.
Especially these days.
So, 90% in the bunker.
Yeah, it's we work super hard, but I think for me, having the opportunity to be paid to be a writer was such a joy. I just couldn't believe it. It was something that I'd always loved to do, and having that opportunity to make a paycheck from writing was wonderful, and it's really just gone from there.
And Paul, less glitz and glamour, maybe that might not have attracted you.
What are you saying?
Jeans and a white shirt, although we're pretty much in the same outfit.
Well, you can tell I didn't get into it for the glitz and the glamour. I think that happens in different magazines to the ones that I'm involved in. But I still think it's a fun industry to be a part of. It gets a bad rap in some ways, because it's all about, you know, people thinking about declining circulations and stuff like that. But once, you know, working on a magazine, I agree. I think it's an amazing place to work. I think you get, you know, the content you get in magazines, you just don't get elsewhere. I don't think it can ever be replicated online. It's something about holding a magazine, the smell of the magazine, and just the intimacy you get with your favorite publication. And I think it's just an amazing industry, and I've loved every second of it.
A lot of love for magazines in this room, that's for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's really important to add news, and obviously we've got our Australian Magazine Awards coming up on the 24th of November, which recognises excellence in magazine publishing. And like you just said, Paul, there is a lot of negativity around decline and some of those negative stories that are pushed out in the media. Why do you think it's so important to celebrate magazines at the moment?
Well, I think there's lots of reasons. I think print circulations are certainly down, as they are in newspapers, but interaction with magazines, I don't think, has ever been higher. If you look at the websites and the newsletters and the podcasts and events, and it's, you know, it's a boom industry. I mean, there are fewer players than there were, fewer magazines, and to an extent it is survival of the fittest. But I think the readers love their magazines. They're very passionate. They're more passionate about magazines than they are about newspapers or their favourite TV shows. And I think it's that sort of interaction with the reader that drew me into it and has kept me interested, where you write something and you get a reaction. And the magazine I work for now, Take Five, is so interactive. We get something like nearly 40,000 people entering our puzzles every single week. That's getting a stamp and putting it on an envelope and going to the postbox and putting it in. It's not clicking a button online. And they think of the hundreds of letters we get from our readers and tips and photographs. And, you know, to them, Take Five is an important part of their life. And I it's difficult to get that replicated elsewhere in the media. I think magazines can do that in a way that other forms of media can't quite get there.
It's that real loyalty. And something often magazine bosses kind of share with me is the letters they get. These amazing handwritten letters from, you know, Susie, who's 90 in the Northern Territory, reading maybe InStyle every week. Do you have any of those anecdotes that you can share of those people that have that, you know, real loyalty?
Look, I can't think of anything specific off the top of my head, but I do think I agree with Paul. It's amazing that, you know, in this day of not many people putting pen to paper anymore, somebody will do that to write into their favourite magazine. And the same with phone calls. We still get so many phone calls. It's unbelievable. It's a full-time job just fielding all of the phone calls with people ringing in to say they liked something, they didn't like something, they want to see more of this, or where can I buy that? And it's that interaction which I agree you don't really see so much in other forms of media. I think people are just as passionate about print as they always were. I agree with you, Lindsay, that there has been a lot written about, you know, the decline of magazines and that sort of thing. And certainly, like, you know, we all work in the industry. We know that it's hard. But there's a lot of good news.
What about
stories
the positive
there?
Stories?
I know.
What about the increases? They're the hard things to get out. Interestingly, yeah. that doesn't really fit with the narrative, does it? Even if you had a circ increase, it wasn't really ever printed. But I also think people can interact with you so many ways these days now that you might get handwritten letters, you might get phone calls, you get posts on Instagram, you get people sharing your video, you get reams and reams of comments on Facebook about your content, and you're connecting with people in all these different ways. Where still your magazine is the crux of the brand or the pinnacle of the brand, but to be able to reach people in all these other ways, I think it's magical too. Like, and really, I sort of thrive on the idea that your content has now become parcelled up in so many different interesting ways.
I think also there's the problem magazines had, and I think it was true of all traditional media, is that a lot of young media buyers are sort of impressed by digital. They want to impress their bosses that they're the cutting edge, that they're the first ones on the podcast, or they're the first ones vlogging, or whatever it might be, and trying to impress their clients, whereas magazines were seen as a little bit unsexy, a little bit sort of old hat. And that was a shame, because I think it's not a fair representation. And I think there's a few media experts now, people like Mark Ritson, kicking back on that and saying, well, actually, magazine advertising is much better value than Facebook or Google, because the intimacy you get, the quality of the delivery of your ad is so much better. And part of my job is going out, talking to advertisers and showing them what we can do for them, and showing the results they can get, and the, you know, the endorsement they can get by being part of someone's favorite magazine. And I think more money should be spent on advertising in print. I'm slightly biased, arguably, but it's something I've done. If you find that too, that the people from an online agencies, and they don't get that interaction, they don't get the targeting, and they don't get the quality of an ad in a magazine.
Well, I think to your point, Paul, what we've noticed, and I'm sure that you've probably both have noticed this as well, is we did notice quite a big swing away from print advertising when digital sort of first came in, and there was all of these different things you could do, and that all felt very exciting. But we're actually noticing a swing back to print now. We're having people come back to us and say, sure, maybe we were a bit premature, maybe we went too hard one way, and now we want a bit more of a balance, and we want to come back into the traditional print product. But we also want to talk to you about your online properties, your social media. Mm. And it feels like it's sort of evening out a little bit more
it's
now,
It's also about,
I would say,
like, understanding the narrative on the different platforms. Like, for clients, like, a beautiful print ad, you know, can set a scene and something important, a vibe for a client, whereas they might be able to tell a story in a more practical way via a video on your Facebook stream, or via, you know, an entry mechanism on a digital, you know, a display, wherever they want to position what they're doing on digital. But they can really convey different things about their products across the different platforms. And so eliminating one thing from the equation, I don't think it's ever been the solution. I think you can tell different stories about a brand or a product or a client's product across your different platforms far more effectively than only having that one option.
I think what probably happened is, a few years ago, advertising departments got a little bit lazy, or they relied too much on display and they were waiting for people to come to them. Well, I think now we're much more clever at sort of finding ways to integrate native advertising or sponsorships and events, so they get a better service than they did a few years ago, when really magazines were doing so well, crest of a wave, that they just could wait for people to come to them. Mm. And that changed.
Yeah.
And I think magazines were a little bit slow in realizing that and thinking, well, we need to step up our service and our delivery. And now I think if you come to any of our companies as an advertiser, there's just so many options. There's so many ways that we can integrate and we can make that product come alive in ways that we wouldn't have known or thought about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And I think that we talk more about partnerships now rather than advertising and advertisers. And I mean, as much as we would all love somebody just come and say, I'm buying 10 pages, and that would be a relief. But no, seriously, I think it is about those partnerships, and it's about working with people, building relationships, finding out what they want for their brand and how we can help them communicate that, as you say, carry on all of those different channels. It might be something really fun on social media. It might be something more beautiful in print, and it might be something really native and interactive online. And I think being able to play in all of those spaces is a real strength that magazine brands have now.
And I think it's interesting, obviously magazines have had those negative headlines, but there's so many positive stories, to your point, Kerry, about the innovation you guys are doing across social media, also in terms of podcasts and new events, which is why this year at the Australian Magazine Awards, we've introduced the category of Best Launch, which, you know, recognises any new innovations that, of course, you guys are doing kind of every week, every month, every day. Maybe you guys could talk me through some of the innovations you guys have introduced at your individual businesses and kind of, yeah, what you guys are doing.
Well, yeah, probably the most surprising thing for me at Delicious has been we launched Studio Delicious earlier in the year. It was in response to, we knew we had to increase engagement with video, and we knew that there was a ready audience. A lot of people were craving, you know, food information via video. So we launched and built our own studio in our editorial team. And we started a program, a regular programming format, just to see what would happen. And we very quickly went from something like 480,000 video views in total to 5 million within a few months. And now we're averaging 500,000 video views per week. That's just my team generating video content, obviously, that we think out and plan. But we've started monetizing it now as well, certain segments across a different array of clients, from tourism to FMCG. But I think that, for me, is a really interesting, you know, another facet or asset to the brand that I didn't probably think was going to be there 12 months ago. But the audience is there, and the audience was hungry for it, and it Delicious was able to translate well in that category. And it also increased our engagement and our referrals, and so that our traffic's increased as a result. So I think, yeah, that would probably be my the key surprise for me in the last 6 to 12 months.
And what about you, Emily?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. The main thing that I suppose we've done in the last 12 months is we redesigned the whole magazine 12 months ago, which was a little bit scary, but it was time to do it, and we've really taken InStyle in quite a different direction to how it was before. We wanted it to feel very different to what was happening online and what was happening in social media. So rather than trying to compete in that space with lots of content, bitsy content, lots of images, we really took it back to being quite sophisticated and luxe, with lots of white space, longer read stories, so things that people couldn't access online, I suppose. Because when we're asking somebody to buy a magazine right now, we're not asking them just to spend $10 or $5 or whatever it is. We're asking for their time as well. And as we know, time is the biggest luxury that we have. So we're asking a lot of someone when they buy a magazine. So we really decided to change the way we were doing things a little bit with the mag. And when you do a redesign, you always think, you know, this could be a bit scary with readership, because that can, it can throw it off for a few months. And we actually saw an increase in readership, and we're still seeing increases in readership, which is really wonderful. So our readership is actually up year on year, which is exciting. And I think that speaks to the fact that, as we were saying, people are still really engaged in magazines, and they're really engaged with, you know.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Fresh new ideas and new concepts. Just a little concept that we started this year is an event called InStyle Shops. So with one of our partners, Macquarie Centre, they came to us and said, we really want to encourage more people into our Australian fashion designer floor. And, you know, how can we do that? And we were wanting, obviously, new ways to speak to our readers face-to-face, and we came up with the concept of InStyle Shops. We've just done our second one last week, which was hugely successful. And it looks like it's going to become a really nice tentpole event for our brand. And I think, you know, that has nothing to do with our printed product. It was an event. It was driven digitally and through social media. And I think that's also really exciting that brand InStyle can put together something like that, which is outside the pages of a magazine. It's something different, but it really still is like sort of integral to our brand.
Mm. Yeah, and Paul, obviously events are a huge space for publishers and everyone is kind of moving into that space. It's a great revenue stream. Are you doing anything across your portfolio in terms of events or any other kind of innovations, maybe podcasts?
Well, Take 5 doesn't do events as such. We have moved much more into the digital space for the last 12 months. Our EDM, now 70,000 people receive that. We're looking at podcasts soon, and we introduced online entry to our puzzles, and within about 2 months we had 10,000 people a week entering our puzzles online, which is, you know, pretty amazing figures, considering that our online presence wasn't huge at the time. We revamped our website. Bauer have got a website called Now to Love, which is across several of the magazines, and that's going really, really well, getting brands together in one place. So there's a lot of movement going on. It feels like the industry and Bauer particularly have got lots of things, lots of irons in the fire, lots of plans, and I think that will obviously have to continue as we go forward.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting because both Bauer and PackMags have new CEOs, just this year, actually. Are you guys feeling a lot of change in your businesses at the moment? Bauer, probably not as much because your CEO is literally a couple months in, but maybe PackMags. I know a lot of changes have gone on the last 6 months specifically.
Yes, certainly. I mean, we sort of say that there's been more change in the last 18 months than in the last 18 years in the industry, and certainly within Pacific Magazines as well. But I think change is always exciting, and I think newness comes from change. I've worked with Zav, with Peter Zavick, since I was 22 years old or something. So obviously I was really sad to see him go, and I think we all were, and Sydney's loss is Melbourne's gain, and Zav really came from the commercial side of things, and he was a really, really strong leader. But then having Jared come on board last year, that's actually been great for us as well, because he's really come into the role with passion and determination and drive. And I think in this market, that's really exciting. It's really good to sort of have somebody really pushing us along. And Jared's come more from the editorial side of things. So he was an editor. He's been a magazine editor. So he gets what that's like as well. And he understands the challenges that we have day to day as well. So, but because he was our commercial director before and working very closely with Zav, I suppose the transition was quite seamless. Mm. But certainly it's an exciting new period for Pacific Magazines. Mm.
And what about Bauer?
Well, I think anyone who's met Paul Dykesall knows that there's no one who's more excited about magazines. He's been in magazines for longer than any of us put together, probably. And he's already made some changes. What I think is good is that he's got that passion for the industry, and he's very hands on. You see him walking the corridors. He's meeting people. He's very visible, and he's very open. He's someone who, I think, what you see is what you get, and he is in the process of changing the company and gearing it up so that it's future-proofed and in a really good state to go forward and be innovative.
Mm.
It's still early days, but I think everyone in the company is pretty, you know, very thrilled about the way things are going at the moment.
Mm. It's kind of exciting, isn't it, that both, Paul, you chose to use the term passionate, and so did I. And, you know, two very, you know, big players in this industry have both got CEOs which are really, really passionate about magazines, and I think that can only be a super positive thing for our industry as a whole.
Yeah, it's interesting. The magazine industry definitely seems to have much more passion than other industries I speak to. Obviously, you're kind of led by Nicole Sheffield, who I can't even remember her job titles these days. It changes
it's
all the time.
Chief Digital Officer.
Oh, no, you make me look bad.
CDO. Yeah, we've had restructure, I guess.
Yeah.
Although Nicole is still our manager, her job's a lot bigger.
Mm.
But, yeah, I mean, she's a digital genius, and I don't really know. Like, Nicole's that sort of person who sets these incredibly hard targets, but and you think, how am I going to get there? But we do, and she's, I don't even know how to describe her. She's a force of nature. But she probably the main change for us is that all of the people at the top, the message from New York, from Robert Thompson, from Michael Miller, from Nicole and Damien Eales is one of collaboration, which is very different for us at News Corp. To the sum of the parts, this it's such a very powerful company, and to be able to have this real encouragement to be integrating and sharing content, to be the strength that we should be, that's the big change. That's very exciting, particularly for like a brand like Delicious, which now is part of the Sunday Telegraph, the Sunday Herald Sun, the Sunday Mail. You know, we put together the Delicious 100 properties with all the Sunday mastheads, or, you know, we rolled out with the Prestige Network, with the Australian and the magazines. We've got Food Corp coming up. There's this big sort of, I guess, strength in numbers of the collective powers of the different verticals. And I really like that message that's coming, you know, through, and there's a lot of brainstorming and, yeah, it's just very, it feels progressive, even though it's tough, and we all know it's tough. There's an honesty about that, but it's some really good resolutions as to where we're going to be in 3 years. And that feels, you feel like there's some really amazing people at the top of the business, and Robert Thompson and the Murdochs and so on. They're, you know.
Yeah, and it's obviously a strategy that's paying off for Delicious, because you won Magazine Brand of the Year last year.
That was really exciting.
Yeah, the best,
thrill.
Biggest award of the day. That's the Australian Magazine Awards.
It was really, really, it felt really rewarding, because we had worked so hard and built so many things over the last 18 months. Obviously, you know, it was because News Corp bought the brand outright from the ABC, and after that happened, you know, that I had an incredible product team behind me to build delicious.com.au. We launched Delicious on Sunday and Stella in the mastheads. We launched the videos, we launched the books and the MOOCs division, and the brand just exploded. And it was really great to see that recognized, and for the team and for the broader business as well, in that obviously there was a 3- and 5-year strategy for Delicious, and to see it paying dividends has been exciting. And it's nice to be on a brand in growth where you're building things, and it's like, okay, what's next and where can we go next? And to have that, the newspaper or the masthead network to be able to tap into, and all the learnings from them is a very, you know, for me, I learn a lot, and there's a lot of, you know, I feel like they're so big and enormous and, you know, successful, that it's a whole other learning curve working with them, as well as with magazine and the digital product teams as well.
And I want to call food a niche area, but it's not really that niche.
8.1 million Australians.
We all eat it and we all enjoy it. But, you know, it is, you know, food has really gone through a massive resurgence, and it's really going well. Obviously, News Corp launched Food Corp, so there's a lot going on. And also Take 5 won our general interest magazine of the year last year. Do you think niche publishing is maybe the way to go? Like, it's obviously...
Well, we got 700,000 readers, so we're not niche as such.
We're kind of a big niche.
Bigger than most niches.
But, an environment.
I think what's good about... The reason Take 5 works is because you can't really get the content online. Celebrity content you can get online. You can get sort of specialist information online. But Take 5 is about people telling us their amazing real-life stories. So they write into us in their hundreds and thousands, telling us the most intimate details of their lives. Sometimes they're telling us stuff they haven't even told their partners. And it's extraordinary to share those stories and to talk to these women who are prepared to sort of share their story with their favourite magazine. The whole magazine is written in first person, so it does really feel like an interface between them. And I think because you can't get that sort of real life online, I mean, you can get, you know, stories and true crime, etc., but not told first person by a normal Australian woman sharing it with her friends. And also puzzles with prizes. Again, you can get lots of puzzles online and you can get prizes, but most of them are spurious or not real or whatever, whereas ours are, you know, something like $60,000 worth of prizes every single week. So that, I think, is why Take Five's niche is so big, as it were, that you know, you can't get that content elsewhere, you know, and that's really important to us. And that's something that I think that contributed to our success in the last few years, to sort of maintain a really strong readership and really loyal readers who, you know, the price of a stamp these days is has gone right up. So to still be entering the puzzles every single week using stamps and is testament to the quality of the product and the fact that they just like telling each other about their amazing lives. I mean, some of them is just extraordinary.
And we actually have two award winners in the room. We have Editor of the Year, and then Kerry, you won it in 2015.
Was I after you?
Maybe I was after you. Was I before you?
I think you were before.
Listen, I was after.
And then you were, 2015. So Emily, some
pressure. You're
quietly stand in the corner over here.
Yeah, you're going to get nominated this year. But I guess, you know, the editor role has changed so much, and you have to be so much more involved. How do you think it's changed, Kerry?
I mean, it's not even comparable. When I think about, it's been nearly 15 years. It's not even comparable. It's like apples and oranges. It was a monthly magazine, and now you're
a daily
you're not
publisher.
Really a magazine editor, you're a brand editor-in-chief. You know, like you're thinking about all of the, you know, you're responsible for every page view, you're responsible for your social referrals, you're responsible, you know, for so many facets. So I think in a way it gets harder and faster, but at the same time, if you didn't have all these new challenges, like as you go further into your job, like you'd probably have been incredibly bored by now. So you keep learning, and like you keep, you know, you're always learning, and you never know what each day is going to bring. And I think for me, that's key, to be able to keep learning.
Yeah. I think readers soon know when an editor's got jaded.
Oh, yes,
bored.
True. Very
I think,
true.
You know, I think I've got the best job in magazines because, you know, the stories that we tell, the fun we have doing the ridiculous cover lines and the interaction is just second to none. I think it's a magazine that's, you know, it's not a glamorous magazine, but it's got, you know, 94% grocery buyers. It's the heart of rural Australia and, you know, Western Sydney and rural Queensland and sort of just the sort of real heart of the country. And I think that's fascinating. It's not, you know, Eastern Suburbs glam. I don't go to quite as many glamorous parties as you two, I'm sure, but you know, but it's still that sort of connection, I guess, with the readers that it's difficult to sort of find elsewhere, many places.
Yeah. And even in your, is it 2 years as editor?
Yeah, it's coming up to 2.5 years.
I bet even in 2 years it's changed for you.
It's changed immeasurably in 2.5 years. It's so different now to even back when I started, which really, let's be honest, isn't that long ago. But I think, yeah, it's obviously a lot busier. I mean, I have a daily online meeting now. I certainly wasn't having that 2.5 years ago. And my team is working across all of our channels, not just the print magazine anymore, but everybody's working across everything. And there's a true sense of collaboration. There's more of everything, more content. There's more events. There's more to do. But I think, no matter, as you know, we're probably more Eastern Suburbs glam than maybe Las Vegas, but I think no matter who your audience is, and no matter who you're speaking to, being an magazine editor it's such a special job because
it's the best.
We get to have so much fun.
Best job in the world.
It's really it's tough and it's lots of responsibility.
Except when you're getting slammed,
yeah,
but, you know.
Exactly. But it's fun and as you say, every day is different and every day is certainly different now, and we get to work with amazing teams, and I think that's what people don't really realise about magazines is that, you know, if you want to make a lot of money, you don't come and work in a magazine. But we have these teams who, like, I have girls who have been working for InStyle since before you were the editor of InStyle. And, you know, we're talking sort of 15, 17 years on a title. And you don't stay around just because it's the same. And I think it's that sense of fun that really keeps us all going. And we have a lot of responsibility. I always say that if this job doesn't work out for me, I could go and work at the UN or something like that, because I feel like I'm constantly negotiating things from here and there. But at the end of the day, we have a great time, and I think that's really a gift.
Mm, yeah. What's your favourite thing about the industry, Kerry?
Oh, that's such a hard...
I know, it is hard, isn't it?
You know what I love is no day is ever the same, and, like always, it's the unexpected. So you just could never possibly... I don't know if you guys agree, but you could never possibly get bored in this job. It's just never boring. It's just... it's almost like a, you know... not a sitcom, but sort of the things that might happen in your average day can range from the sublime to the absurd.
It's a bit like a sitcom sometimes. Sometimes I say we should be writing this stuff down, the conversations that we have.
And you have to work really hard, because if you don't put in the effort, like you're saying, readers can tell if you're in a rut, you know, it becomes very apparent. So it's not like you're mucking around, but it's hard work, but it's absolutely never boring. And for me, I don't like being bored, and, you know, obviously that's why I'm attracted to this job.
Mm. What about you, Paul? Because we know you said it's not the parties, so it must be something else.
It's not the parties. I suppose we're lucky that we're working on magazines that we like reading anyway. I mean, I suppose if I was editing Chartered Accountant Weekly, it might be trickier to sort of retain that enthusiasm for a 17-year period. But I just think it's just a good industry to be in. I mean, Take Five readers are so incredible. Some of their stories, talking about, you know, their husband coming back to life as a fly, or marrying a cow, or falling in love with a wall, or telling us their most, you know, intimate stories. Mm-hmm. And no two stories are ever the same. You know, it's a real challenge every week to decide which stories that we have to sort of, you know, not put in the magazine, because there's just so many demanding space, and sort of finding that space is a challenge. And the writers are coming up saying, we've got to put this in, it's such an amazing account. And I think that's I guess lucky that I've got a great team who are firing all cylinders to sort of make that happen on a weekly basis, because a weekly magazine is like a treadmill. You've got deadlines every day, you've got 20-30 pages have to go every single day, and if they don't, then you've got more the next day. So you've got to be organized, keep on track, and keep it fresh.
Mm. Well, that seems like a nice positive note to finish up on. The Australian Magazine Awards are open for entries until the 26th of September. They are hosted this year at Ovolo at Woolloomooloo. Get your entries in now. You've been listening to the Ad News podcast, recorded at Nova and sponsored by the Trade Desk. See you next time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.